Hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Nitsan, and this is The Final Curtain, a special series from Stories from the Eastern West, bringing you personal accounts from people who experienced the collapse of the Eastern Bloc.
For this story, our producer Wojciech traveled to Tallinn in Estonia to witness the Song and Dance Celebration Festival, an event that gathers a third of the country's population in one place for 2 days.
The tradition of communal singing and this 150-year-old festival were two things that Estonians held on to during their turbulent 20th century history, which was marked with forceful incorporation into the USSR and intense Russification.
Singing folk songs and the festival itself played an instrumental role in the fight for Estonian independence in the late 1980s. Wojciech met with Kaie Tanner, who experienced it all firsthand.
Coming up on The Final Curtain.
Dramatic eyewitness accounts of fighting in Bucharest.
Police had forcefully beaten demonstrators in East Berlin.
Thousands of Czechoslovaks shaking their house keys.
The protest movement is now too big to be controlled.
Good evening. It is over in Poland.
Iron Curtain across Europe, torn down.
Üks, kaks, kolm, neli, viis, kuus, seitse, kaheksa, 90. 9, 10.
That's good.
I am Kaie Tanner. I work in Estonian Cultural Association as General Secretary, and I also am conductor of Estonian Radio Children's Choirs and Girls' Choir. Yes, of course, I later learned that there was really certain plan to Russify all Estonia, including, of course, Estonian education and so on, but finally it didn't happen. Our Russian lessons started from first grade at school. We had to learn Russian. Of course, I must say that there was also a quite strong feeling among the children that it is something we are forced to do. And so in higher grades already, children just missed Russian lessons or didn't do their homework or so on. Of course, many Russians were living in Estonia. If you went to official institution, you often had to speak in Russian. If you went to doctors, many doctors were Russian, so you had to speak Russian with doctors. So it was just something we had to do. And also I remember the special shops for war veterans, you know, oranges and sausages and all kind of things were sold there, which you couldn't get anywhere else. And it was quite a bad feeling if you saw all these Russian war veterans going to the shop and coming out with all the goods which you couldn't buy anywhere else. And also, I lived in Lasnamäe, and again, as people saw that were long queues to get a new flat, and always the Russians received new flats before Estonians. Also, it was supposed to be one queue for everyone. So, of course, people felt kind of bitter or kind of sad because they felt that they are always second or even last in their own country. We sang a lot at home. Actually, my mother loved singing, and she sang very often at home, not only Estonian folk songs, but also songs from their alpinist club. Of course, they also sang so-called forbidden songs at home, songs about Estonian tricolor flag, songs about Estonians who escaped to the woods. We sang these songs at home, but also we were always say that these songs you never can sing out of home. And we knew that these songs are forbidden. It was mainly that you can never tell that you have nothing against Soviet powers or Soviet authorities. You can never tell that someone you know has something against of it. Just as it was, keep your mouth shut as much as possible. Because my grandpa was in German army and he was taken to Siberia for that. He died in Siberia. And it is just something what people talked at home, but not outside.
Despite the Russification and the omnipresence of KGB spies and snitches, Estonians managed to preserve their language and national identity. When the USSR started to weaken, they jumped at the opportunity.
A defining moment of this peaceful revolution was after the state-controlled version of the Song Celebration Festival. After it ended, people didn't go back to their homes, but remained on the festival grounds, continuing to sing.
We went there with the other girls from my class, and of course the emotion was great, because as you know, for all people's gatherings you had to have permission, and of course there was no official permission for this night song festivals, and it was just a big feeling of freedom. Suddenly, together with this 100,000 or something people in Song Celebration Ground, even if you saw Soviet police, even if you saw the tanks, it was so powerful feeling that suddenly they can't do anything to us. They can't do anything because there is too much of us. You can't arrest 100,000 people. We just can't. And the feeling that suddenly I can sing the forbidden songs, and suddenly the bands can play, and suddenly we can be together, and they can't do anything to us. It was so powerful feeling, it was wonderful. People were very much excited, and then already first secret tricolor flags appeared, and people were very happy that they can wear them again. And actually many people were hiding tricolor flags in their, you know, in attics or somewhere countryside, and now they brought it out, and it was so great to see how people suddenly supported each other. Because suddenly they felt that together they are so strong. Because people were so used to be afraid of. And, you know, look behind your shoulder all the time, and thinking about who can be a person who goes to KGB and makes complaint about you. People were suspicious, people were afraid. And suddenly they felt that they trust each other, they are together, and together they are strong and powerful. So I think that the feeling in next days was very much different.
For countries that had been incorporated into the USSR, breaking apart was incredibly difficult, even unthinkable. It meant an actual breach in the Soviet Union's integrity. Few people believed it was even possible. Still, the Estonian parliament voted to declare independence in 1991.
Even though the Soviet Union had obviously weakened, its hardliners didn't want to watch it being peacefully dismantled. In reaction to the Estonian parliament's declaration, Soviet tanks drove into Tallinn and put a halt to their attempts at freedom and independence.
For us, these days were special because we were in Georgia. And I think we were in Georgia because we were in mountain hike. We saw from news what is happening in Estonia. And we were discussing, okay, how we get back for what happens. We had not so good connection. And if you are in Caucasus mountains, you can't... You hardly see any people there, maybe some shepherds in mountains. You see, like, after 2 days, you see one person with his sheep. So we didn't know much about that. But of course, when we arrived to the Black Sea, we saw the news. And of course, we were very happy that it ended as it ended.
Facing military intervention, Estonians acted as human shields and formed thick rings of people around the TV and radio headquarters being targeted by the Soviet assault. The Kremlin would have a major bloodbath on their hands if they were to push through.
But luckily, they just couldn't afford it anymore. Another peaceful revolution had become a fact.
For Kaye, it meant that she suddenly lived in a free country. No more censorship, no more fear, no more forced Russification.
Somewhat unsurprisingly, she chose to devote her life to music and to carrying on the tradition of communal singing.
I remember that in music school already from fifth grade, the teacher said to me, "Oh, you should go and learn music and you should become music teacher because it suits to you." And I said, "Never." Because I had even no idea that I could be a music teacher. But during gymnasium, I just discovered how big and interesting is music world. And I was singing in a choir and I liked it very much. And I suddenly thought that really choir conducting is a great job. But I basically, even more than singing or conducting or music, even more I liked the possibility to work with people. Just maybe the feeling that music is one way to help people, which partly certainly came from there. And 2007, I was conducting the Big Song Celebration Choir for the first time. And since that, I have conducted in 5 song celebration, and always the young children's choirs, which is the greatest choir category in my opinion. Because it's always like 10,000 singers, you have to make yourself interesting for the children so that they look at you, because otherwise you can't keep them together in the song. And I must say, this challenge is always very interesting, and it is great. And their emotions are so so fierce, so pure, so frank, that it is always wonderful to see it. And you know that also these children want to make very good performance. They are there for first time, mostly. They want to perform very well. And so it gives you so much power and strength. And it's really great.
One of the conditions inherited after over 50 years of Soviet occupation was a country comprised of two peoples, Estonians and Russians. Even today, 30 years after the revolution, every fourth citizen of Estonia is Russian and speaks Russian as their native language.
The process of living together peacefully, or forgiving the past, hasn't been fully completed yet. Relationships between the two groups can be tense, mostly due to recent history.
Yes, of course there are Russians also in the song celebration. And I remember that when it was years ago, we had, you know, this kind of Russian manifestations in Tallinn streets and windows broken and whatever, after the Soviet monument was removed from Tallinn center. That was a kind of Russian manifestations or riots in the streets. And just after that, we had song celebration rehearsal in Russian-speaking region in Estonia, in eastern Estonia. And we were a little bit nervous about it because it's totally Russian-speaking singers. And we had to rehearse Estonian patriotic songs just after these riots in Tallinn. And so I had to rehearse Estonian anthem. And I felt really a little bit uncertain because I was not sure how they react if I go to the hall and say, oh, now we sing Estonian anthem. And so I said instead the headline, now we sing My Fatherland, Thou Art My Love. And for all conductors' big surprise, all this Russian-speaking hall stood up and sang by heart. And actually, usually Estonians in rehearsals, they don't stand up during the anthem because it is rehearsal. But these Russians all stood up for Estonian anthem. And they sang it so, not only by heart, but from heart. And they sang afterwards that we love song celebration, we love these songs. And it was so great to see that they say that we are Estonians. They are Russian speaking, they don't speak Estonian, but they say we are Estonians. They said it in Russian, but they said we are Estonians. And I felt it's the most powerful thing, because as one of my old friends said, people who sing together never fight against each other.
Juhatas Vaike Uibopuu. Me täname sind.
This episode of The Final Curtain was produced for Culture PL and hosted by Adam Zhuavsky and me, Nitzan Reisman.
If you want to learn more about the story you just heard, see the show notes in your podcast app or go to the Stories from the East and West website at sftew.com.
Remember to check our feed next week for the very last chapter of The Final Curtain. You'll get to hear how people unable to travel tried to escape the difficult reality around them through the simple act of writing letters.
Bye.